hog tie was. I had no clue. That's how you treat an animal.
So looking at this nationally, the scores of people who have died with this use of the hobble, no centralized database about how it is used, Joe Neff. The responses of the police departments to your repeated requests to explain what their policies are.
Some departments were very helpful. And actually, in Aurora, they released the data. They actually released on the types of restraints that they were using. So that is how we were able, is one of the few cities where we could actually count the times the hobble was used. And to their credit...
We have 15 seconds.
Okay, their credit, the police chief has denounced the practice and fired the officer who hobbled Shatea Kelly and left her in the well of a car for a drive down to the police station.
An astounding story, which you write about in your Marshall Project piece. He died like an animal. Some police departments hogtie people despite knowing the risks. We will link to it. Joe Neff, thanks so much for being with us. And also Flint Taylor, lawyer for Marcus Smith's family with the People's Law Office in Chicago. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to KVOO Portland. Please join us for the next few hours of special programming for Youth Day. We'll hear from KVOO's very own youth collectives, The Underground and Randomonium. Other programming includes KVOO's Art Talk Bus Stop and a full hour of Culture in Motion. Please consider donating to KVOO's youth collective at kboo.fm/youth. All proceeds from today will go directly to maintaining and sustaining the youth collective. Thank you very much.
Today's Youth Day on KBOO Community Radio. Support youth making radio by going to kboo.fm/give to donate today.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. It's Wednesday. Time for the Wednesday Talk Radio program with your host, Paul Rowland. Stay tuned.
Good morning, everybody. This is your regular Wednesday Talk Radio host, Paul Rowland, coming at you still from my home here in the Monteville neighborhood of Portland, Oregon. And this is Youth Day programming. I'm kind of starting it off with a special program on youth climate activism with a couple of young guests also on the phone. Let me just introduce the topic and them. So before COVID hit us, youth like Greta Thunberg and many plaintiffs around the world at this point in a number of landmark youth climate lawsuits and the Sunrise Movement, among others, were leading a renewed fight against the global warming threat and the institutions that feed it. Of course, the COVID pandemic and the massive social economic disruptions it caused have really dominated our attention, so that in a lot of ways the climate change crisis and climate activism have taken a back seat. Of course, the Trump administration had something to do that in terms of any federal response, Now, with the pandemic abating, at least here in the U.S. and much of Europe, among some other places, and a Biden administration and Democratic-controlled Congress more open to taking seriously the global climate threat, we're taking a look at where the youth climate movement is at, which really has been, in a lot of ways, leading the climate movement. Of course, they have the brunt to bear. So I've got two young guests representing two important parts of that movement. Avery is 15 years old and lives in Eugene, Oregon. In 2014, she received the National Coalition Against Pesticides Rachel Carson Award, which honors individuals who are making an on-the-ground difference in their community and inspiring others to do the same. She joined the federal lawsuit, Juliana versus the United States, filed by Our Children's Trust in 2015. She's now at the Environmental Club in her high school and continues to help organize rallies in her hometown. Ada is currently a ninth grader at Grant High School and has been organizing with Sunrise PDX for about 8 months. She's a co-captain of their transportation and housing campaign, which has been working to oppose the Oregon Department of Transportation's proposed Rose Quarter freeway expansion, an $800 million proposal to add more lanes to I-5, which is right next to her former middle school, Harriet Tubman, and is already heavily polluting the air there and in the surrounding neighborhood. So I'm sure she'll be talking about that. So good morning to you, both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, okay, I'm going to just first ask each of you in turn, starting with, Avery, just to maybe describe, you can take these as you want, but, maybe when you first became aware of what global warming is or what it means or how it will affect or might affect you in the future, how, you got involved, what sort of led you to the kind of climate activism you're involved in, and then we can sort of talk more specifically about the kind of work that you're actually doing. So, Avery, you can start.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So my work really started in kindergarten, which, funny enough, sounds kind of funny, but I was very concerned about the well-being of animals and how climate change was affecting them. And so I decided to start throwing parties and raise money for them. I would invite my friends, and I would raise money for different organizations that were helping that specific animal. And then in fifth grade...
So wait a second. Sorry to interrupt, but kindergarten. So I guess you're closer. I certainly can't remember kindergarten, but then I'm over 60. You obviously are closer to it. But so what would have sparked you to be aware? Was it an adult in your life, a teacher, watching things on the news? What got you interested in that?
I think that the first thing, I was reading a lot of books, and I think that was probably where it started. I read a lot of, National Geographic books and stuff with my parents, so I think that's probably where it, sparked from. But my parents are also both environmentalists, and so I think that was also an influence.
That helps, yeah. To give you an early start. So, okay, I think you're going to say about fifth grade?
Yeah, so then when I was in fifth grade, I was invited to join the lawsuit with Our Children's Trust. And, being a little 10th grader, I didn't really know what that meant. And I was like, sure, sounds like a good plan to me. And then kind of got roped into this awesome lawsuit that has taught me a lot about our justice system and a whole host of things. So, yeah.
Okay. So go ahead, Ada, the same questions.
Yeah, so... I learned, in elementary school, I guess, about the idea of global warming, but it was always presented as something that was affecting, the polar bears and the ice caps were melting, and people made it seem like the ways to fix that were to improve our own personal sustainability. So they would say, we need to stop global warming, we need to recycle, and we need to not eat meat and things like that, which do add up in the long run, but ultimately adults often made it seem like it wasn't as big a deal as I now realize it is. And it always sort of felt like, oh, the adults will fix this. And as I've gotten older, I've realized that that's clearly not the case. And I don't feel like anyone is panicking about the climate crisis as much as they should. So then as I went into middle school, I went to Harriet Tubman, which is right next to one of the busiest parts of I-5. And the pollution there is already some of the worst in the state because of the diesel emissions from the thousands of trucks that are passing that school every day. And so my classmates and I started getting involved in the fight to oppose ODOT's expansion of that freeway. And at first it was about air pollution and it was about helping our school, but then it kind of made me realize that this is also a climate issue and this is an issue of racial injustice, and there are all of these bigger picture things that people aren't talking about that much. Like 40% of Oregon's carbon emissions come from transportation, and ODOT doesn't want people to know that because people right now don't think of the Oregon Department of Transportation as a villain in the climate crisis, but they are, and they're hiding that. And so, yeah, I've just, a lot of the work that I've done in the last couple of years has centered around that and around trying to stop some of the climate change contributors at a larger level. Because while I do recognize that individual personal actions that we take are important, that's not going to be enough if we're not holding accountable the corporations who are contributing the vast majority to the climate crisis.
So let me just get back to Harriet Tubman. So yeah, I mean, that's an incredibly, not just I-5 itself, but all the interchanges, and, you know, it's also quite near industrial areas. And so was that very tangible to you? Could you smell it? I think I've read that actually, I'm not sure if it was Harriet Tubman or a different school, that actually there's, you know, visible traces on surfaces of the exhaust. Is that true?
Yeah, so the school installed an HVAC system in the building to filter out the air because it was so heavily polluted outside. They needed to make sure that that didn't get into the building. There was, like, dust on all of the surfaces, even though all of the windows are sealed. The freeway is pretty much unavoidable at Harriet Tubman Middle School. You walk outside for recess, and there's a field, and then directly next to it, there's a giant freeway.
Yeah, that's that's pretty. That would certainly get through to you, especially if you were already, you know, tuned in to the issues. That's the kind of thing that really, really galvanizes people, like you know, people who, you know, a lot of the whole movement against toxic waste sites. People who, you know, grew up next to a toxic waste site or next to a polluting factory. It's kind of in your face. Okay, let's go back to Avery and talk about. So I'm familiar with this. I'm actually was friends back in the day, and an activist with the parents of Kelsey Juliana. So I kind of got tuned into this partly through that. And so that obviously it's a Juliana versus the United States, but there's I believe 24 plaintiffs, and you are one, probably one of the younger ones at the time, sounds like. You said you've learned a lot about that. Why don't you just give us your best sort of synopsis or description of what that lawsuit actually is trying to do, and then we'll kind of get into its some of its many twists and turns, because it's gotten incredibly complicated. What is that Juliana versus the United States lawsuit?
Yeah, so it's basically a lawsuit where we are asking the federal government to make a plan on how they're going to reverse the effects of climate change. So we are suing the entire executive branch of government, and we are asking them to make a plan with the courts that we'll then hold them to, so we can hold them accountable in the future, right? So that was like our first grounds that we sued on. And now we're kind of heading back to the beginning because we've had a lot of problems getting through to the courts, mostly getting through to trial because the Trump administration would not allow us to go through because they were stalling every single point of the way. And so basically what we're doing now is we're going back to the beginning and we're asking to revise our initial statement and basically just ask the government to admit, yes, climate change is a problem. Yes, we need to treat it like the emergency that it is, and we need to put all of our effort into reversing it as fast as we possibly can. So we are now back at the district court with Judge Ann Akin, and she has recently ordered us to settle with the Biden administration. And so that has its own set of stuff, but I think that I'm really hopeful that we will be able to come to a mutual agreement with the Biden administration and really work out how we're going to get through this lawsuit.
So, as I said, it's incredibly complicated, and people really should go to the Our Children's Trust website to do a deeper dive into it. But you mentioned Trump, but of course it was filed under Obama, and they actually fought it as well, right? And the Biden administration seems to be continuing to fight it, so it seems to be a bipartisan effort against all of us and the youth. But is that true that all the administrations and where do you see the Biden? Do you see any changes under the Biden administration currently?
Yeah, so the Biden administration hasn't actually fought us yet. We haven't really had enough. They haven't really had enough chances to fight us. But we are hopeful that when we get down to the settlement table, that the Biden administration will be willing to work with us and be a little less opposing. Both the Obama administration and the Trump administration were very adamant against or for fighting us. They really did not want us to go to trial, both of them. And so we're kind of at the point where we're just kind of putting that in the past and really just hoping that we can get to work with the Biden administration because, you know, he claims to be this big environmentally friendly president, and we're really hoping that he can prove that. So
let me just read from the kind of the first paragraph on that Our Children's Trust website about the lawsuit, that in 2015, 21 youth, including you, Avery, and organizational plaintiff Earth Guardians filed a constitutional climate lawsuit against the U.S. government. The complaint asserts that through the government's affirmative actions that cause climate change, it has violated the youngest generation's constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property, as well as failed to protect essential public trust resources. And of course, the remedy, which I was breathtakingly far-sighted, was to actually force the government to come up with an actual realistic science-based plan to basically, you know, rein in the fossil fuel industry and transition, you know, and not just the fossil fuel industry in terms of, you know, the big fossil fuel companies, but I guess, you know, entire spectrum of ways that public policy can actually have an influence over fossil fuel emissions. So that, I understand, is, so are you, are the plaintiffs sort of, because basically what happened was, from what I understand, a three panel, three judges declared, I think last year, that they recognize the gravity of the evidence on the plaintiff's injuries from climate change, the government's role in causing them, and that the government is violating the plaintiff's constitutional rights. However, two of the three judges, which was the majority, also, quote, reluctantly concluded that the plaintiff's requested remedies should be addressed by the executive and legislative branches rather than the courts. So basically, it seems like maybe a tricky maneuver. You're basically, the goal was to force the courts to force or to have the courts force the federal government to come up with this plan. So now, are you saying that with this settlement agreement, it's basically going to sort of do that through a settlement process rather than actually having the court make a judgment that rules that the federal government has to? It's a little complicated.
Yeah, no, it's very complicated. So basically, our first, at first, we were trying to sue the government in order to, yeah, force them to make a plan, right, to reverse their effects on climate change. And then the courts would basically just be there to keep them to their word, right? So now, with settlement, there's kind of a lot of different things that could happen. It's very complicated, but if we come to a good agreement with the Biden administration, which we're hopefully will, Akin, Judge Ann Akin, can then say, yes, you guys deserve to go to trial. And then depending on what we reached in settlement, we can go to trial and display our evidence and say, this is why we deserve these different amendments. And here, you know, here Biden administration, this is a chance for you to make real durable solutions on climate change, because it is going through the courts. And so the next administration cannot reverse those actions that you have taken.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. So before we turn back to Ada, I just want to let people know that because we're still, KABU is still shut down in terms of a volunteer-produced programming, and all three of us are on the phones. We are basically occupying the entire KABU phone system. So we are not going to be able to take listeners' calls, but if you are on Facebook, you can go to my Facebook page, KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio, like it, and then you can make a comment or ask a question through there. I apologize for that, but that's you know, usually I'm either by myself or just one guest, and we can take callers. That's not the case today, but we have two great guests, so that is not too much of a loss. Okay, so let's get back to Ada and your story. So we heard about your kind of immersion in an unfortunate kind of awareness about the effects of a transportation system, and but you're also, as it seems like a lot of these fights against it's a fight against fossil fuel infrastructure in a way. It's a transportation infrastructure. There's been a lot of fights in the Pacific Northwest against export terminals and pipelines and such. And those have all sort of taken a multiple approach in terms of, you know, the immediate impact on the area where the facility is going to be built, you know, social, economic impacts, et cetera, but also increasingly on the climate change impact. In fact, some recent projects have actually been knocked down, and the Washington State Department of Ecology, I think, for the proposed facility up in Kalama, Washington, I believe, what it was going to do, escapes me at the minute. Maybe you can remember, but it included a strong statement on the impacts of that facility on climate change. So, talk about talk about how you got involved with Sunrise PDX, and more broadly about the impact of that project, and more generally on transportation on climate change, Ada.
Yeah, so I got involved in Sunrise PDX last fall or summer because I had been working with my middle school environmental justice club in 7th and 8th grade at Tubman, opposing the Rose Quarter Freeway expansion, and then COVID happened and school suddenly ended, and that group kind of fell apart, and we're working on getting it back together. But yeah, I just, like, all of a sudden had so much free time and I wanted to stay involved in climate activism, and I had heard of Sunrise PDX and I had seen them, like, at climate strikes and stuff. So I went on their website and, like, filled out the interest form and joined. And being in Sunrise just really has, I guess, made me realize the power that I have as a kid to make an impact. I had a lot of support, like, in middle school too, from teachers and parents, and, like, all of my classmates were really involved in opposing ODOT's project. But being in Sunrise, it was really cool to see, like, slightly older people who had been in the movement longer and just sort of seeing everyone collaborate to further goals of climate justice. And so then, more recently, the transportation and housing team within Sunrise was looking for another captain. So I joined that and kind of continued the work against ODOT with Sunrise, because I had been doing that through my school club before. But we are currently working on planning a series of strikes outside of the ODOT building. So every other Wednesday, we bring our stuff downtown and sit outside their building to demand that they stop expanding freeways. One of the demands for that is an environmental impact statement on the Rose Quarter expansion, which is the one that's right next to Harriet Tubman Middle School. They previously did an environmental assessment, which is sort of like the cheaper, shorter, like kind of cheating your way out of an environmental impact statement route. And there's been studies since then that have shown that they essentially lied about the climate impact and about the air pollution impact of that project. They're saying that it would reduce congestion on the freeway, which is completely untrue, and no freeway expansion in North America ever has reduced congestion because of induced demand. So basically, if driving is made more accessible and there's more lanes to drive in, more people are going to drive. And then a few years from now, there's just going to be more traffic again, and they're going to want to expand the freeway again. So it's not a sustainable solution. We need to be investing in public transportation and sustainable transportation infrastructure that is going to actually help us lower our emissions.
Didn't ODOT even either lie or actually conceal that they had secret plans for a 10-lane freeway rather than the 6 lanes that they've been putting out publicly?
Yeah, so I am not super well-versed in like the really technical side of that, but No More Freeways PDX, which is an organization that Sunrise has been working with to plan these strikes, actually sued ODOT recently for that very reason, for lying about the size of the freeway and concealing information. So we're kind of still in the state of waiting to see what happens with that. But yeah, they absolutely cannot be trusted, and they're lying about their climate impact, and they're lying about the pollution. And they're lying about sealing our climate fate by expanding freeways when we have so little time to take action against the climate crisis, which is one of the reasons we're striking. And the other demands for that are a little bit more general. So an immediate moratorium on all freeway expansion within the urban growth boundary, because we recognize that it's not just the freeway by Tubman. It's all of these giant multi-million dollar freeways that ODOT wants to expand that need to be stopped. And then also to stop a couple of pieces of legislation, House Bill 3055 and House Bill 3065, which are in the legislature right now, that would continue to fund ODOT's freeway expansions. And then the last demand is for Kate Brown to appoint a youth climate advocate to the Oregon Transportation Commission. Because the fact that none of the people who are on that commission making the decisions about futures of the world are going to live to see the lasting effects of the climate crisis, and they're not going to live to see the lasting effects of their inaction now. We need young voices there who can advocate for the fact that we need urgent climate action.
Yeah, I mean, the frustrations must be potentially endless the more you think about them. I certainly feel them, but I can imagine, since you have so much of your futures ahead of you and so the climate crisis looms that much larger, that it seems like just asking for a voice shouldn't be too much to ask, but of course they don't really want to hear those voices, and so it seems like the commonality between both of what you're saying, in addition that, you know, you're both about the same age, you're in high school, you're both climate activists, is you know, that you're part of an effort from the young generation to actually demand to have a voice in the impacts that are coming down. So I don't want to hear myself talk. I've got a question from someone, but before we do, I just wanted to talk about this Wednesday event. So is today the day, the every other Wednesday?
Yeah. So right after I get off this call, I have to go pack up my stuff and get ready for that.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time to do this and maybe encourage some other people to go down there. So where will that be again?
Yeah, it's going to be at the ODOT Region 1 headquarters, which is in downtown Portland. It's near the Steel Bridge. The address specifically is 123 Northwest Flanders Street. We're going to be there from 1 to 3 p.m. And the theme for this week, if you are a student listening, the theme is ODOT Do Your Homework. So we're going to have all of the youth bringing our homework with us to sit in front of the ODOT building and essentially be like, hey, ODOT, we are an example for you. Like, we're missing school to be here protesting freeway expansion, which is completely ridiculous. And yeah, just kind of that youth, like, just really showing that we are kids and we care about this. And yeah.
Do you accept older supporters there?
Yes. we need everyone we can get. Focused on youth, but anyone is welcome.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, I remember a protest down at ODOT when I first moved back to Portland. I think it was 2012 or 13. There's a movement to prevent the megaload shipments of huge tar sand steam extraction equipment that was being offloaded and shipped by highway on highways. Anyway, that was ODOT certainly has a lot of responsibilities. So we do have a question. I'm not sure why kids should be the ones who have to answer all these things that older generations have created, but the question is, how can we address trash pollution? We need all product packaging to be decomposable or recyclable. That's from Jane. That's as if you don't have enough issues to contemplate. Either one of you, maybe I'll either one of you want to tackle that one?
Can you repeat the question?
Well, it's basically the issue of you could maybe say how you think it relates to the climate crisis, but how can we address trash pollution? We need all product packaging to be decomposable or recyclable. Obviously, you know, there is an increasing discussion of plastics, which goes right into the whole fossil fuel industry, that being one of the major problems with packaging. So I guess it's the issue of how to deal with trash and packaging.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a branch. You know, like, I feel like the climate crisis has a bunch of different branches coming out off of it, right? Like, there's a bunch of different stems of the problem, and that's definitely one of them. And I think that, I don't know how to act against, I guess, just, like, be super aware of your plastic consumption. I mean, it's really hard. Like, everything is made out of plastic these days, but, you know, doing your best to try and figure out where your stuff comes from and if it's compostable is really important.
So, and that was Ada who just spoke?
No, that was Avery.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Well, while we got you back, let's, I guess I just want to read from this article, because obviously what you're doing is really significant in terms of sort of forcing, I don't know, there's many ways of trying to force institutional reckonings. I mean, there's been suits by cities against fossil fuel companies for the impact on, say, you know, sea level rise or other issues like that. There's a number of attempts to deal with this in a legal way. I know there's been a lawyer who won a massive judgment against Chevron you've maybe heard about this guy, has been like 800 days under house arrest because of just some obscure Byzantine way that the company was able to have its own lawyers go against this guy and try to. Anyway, it's this amazing story. So, you know, there's been, you know, attempts to get fossil fuel companies to clean up their messes, like Chevron and the Amazon. But this youth climate lawsuit is a really novel approach that has now inspired many others. Let me just read a couple paragraphs. WhatsApp chat rooms and Telegram channels across Germany lit up in the early hours of April 29. Young people frantically exchanged messages in a tone that went from disbelief to surprise to euphoria. The country's highest court had just ruled that the government's 2019 climate law was incompatible with fundamental rights, a victory for the 9 young German activists who filed the lawsuit and for the global youth climate movement. Over the next few days, it also changed the course of Germany's politics, economy, and climate strategy for the next 3 decades. I could read a few more to. So a week later, the German government announced it would speed up its transition to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2045 and cut emissions 65% by 2030. The goals will force industry to implement massive emissions cuts over the next decade, in part, and puts the country ahead of most other large economies in addressing climate change. That's exactly the kind of thing that you all are after with your lawsuit. And I imagine they were probably inspired by the bold approach that you all took in 2015, several years earlier. So how does that make you feel that that some people are actually winning?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, right? Like, you see this little, like, droplet of water, and then it turns into a big one. So it's very exciting, and I love that lawsuits all over are winning and are able to hold their governments accountable. You know, it's really inspiring to see.
Great. Well, I encourage people to, again, to go to my Facebook page, KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio, like it, and you can ask your question or make your comment there, as Jane did a little bit ago. This is a Youth Day on KBOO, and starting at 9, there will be many other programs. This is just sort of a taste of what you're going to be coming, the Youth Collective and other youth-oriented shows are going to be bringing you all kinds of programming throughout the day. And you can, and all the funds raised today, we finished our spring membership drive, but we're kind of still in the fundraising mode. So you can go to kboo.fm/youth to donate, and all the money will go directly to the Youth Collective here at KBOO. And I'm speaking with 2 young folks. I'm speaking with Avery, who lives in Eugene and is part of the Juliana versus the United States federal constitutional lawsuit to force the government to actually introduce serious policies to stem devastating climate change, which is impending. And Ada is a 9th grader at Grant High School and has been organizing with Sunrise PDX. Ada, so talk about a little bit more about Sunrise. It kind of hit the news. I think it started in 2017. I think I remember the first action was maybe occupying Nancy Pelosi's office. Is that right?
Yeah. So Sunrise, as a national movement, started in 2017. I specifically am part of the Portland, Oregon hub, which is connected to Sunrise National, but we work on a lot of our own sort of more local campaigns. Right now, we have a few different things we're focusing on. So National is really working a lot right now on their Good Jobs for All campaign, which the Portland, Oregon hub hasn't been super involved in because we have been doing a lot of work with forestry and with ODOT and the freeway expansions. We also had a Halt Chemical Weapons campaign, which has died down a bit now, but we're sort of constantly in the state of figuring out, like, what new projects we want to take on, and how we can best support other groups, like other local climate justice organizations with their goals. And yeah, just sort of figuring out how we, as a hub of Sunrise, can continue supporting National's goals of a Green New Deal. And Sunrise's sort of like short mission is that we are a movement of young people fighting to stop climate change and create millions of good jobs in the process. So we like to sort of keep that idea at the forefront of our work, and then find ways that other local things can further those goals.
So my title for this program that I came up with was Youth Climate Activism from the Courts to Direct Action. And as I recall, as my heydays as an activist, we talked about, you know, every tool in the toolbox, you know, a spectrum of tactics and strategies. Certainly, I was part of the forest protection movement. I was part of Earth First, and we there was a moment where we did work with all the different groups. Things kind of split up at a certain point for various reasons, but you know, there was everywhere from monkey wrenching, which I won't ask you to comment on unless you want to go there, but to actually filing massive lawsuits, like the one that ended up with the Northwest Forest Plan, which maybe you're now dealing with, sort of the attempts to dismantle the Northwest Forest Plan with all this massive so-called salvage logging, post-fire logging, which is going on, which maybe one or both of you might want to talk about, since there's a lot of discussion of the role that forests play in mitigating the effects of climate change. And so I don't know, just I guess the question is, what about sort of the spectrum of ways of approaching, from, you know, direct action can mean all kinds of things. Certainly maybe monkey wrenching is a more extreme form, I guess, but it can mean sitting in at an office, it can mean protesting outside, it can mean all kinds of things. It can mean, you know, maybe stopping a highway. So what do you think about that issue, and how the different climate groups sort of are dealing with all the different strategies? I don't know, it's kind of a general question. Either you want to attempt to take that on?
Yeah, so, were you going to say something?
Oh, no, go for it.
Oh, okay. So Sunrise Movement Theory of Change has three main elements. So we have people power, political power, and the people's alignment. And I think that is kind of what you were getting at. So people power includes things like direct actions and people out in the streets protesting and, you know, like building the movement by talking to people we know and talking to our friends and our communities and trying to bring them in. And I think that is a lot of what I think the PDX Sunrise Hub right now, at least, is focusing on. We're doing a lot of like relational organizing work and direct actions. And then political power is more like kind of the work that Avery is doing and getting legislation passed that is going to help fight the climate crisis and suing the government, which I just want to say is crazy that you're doing that, and that's so awesome. And
oh, thank you.
I feel like this is just like a really good example of like there are all of these different social movements and all of these different organizations who are working towards climate justice, and we need all of them, which is what the People's Alignment is essentially just all of these groups coming together, because in Sunrise we know that Sunrise as one organization doesn't have the people power or the political power to make the changes that we need, which is why we prioritize a lot partnering with other organizations and sort of combining the power that we all have collectively to further those goals. So yeah, just I guess in short, we need a lot of different tactics and a lot of different approaches to stop the climate crisis, and that can be anywhere from direct action to political action, and we need all of those things, which is also one of the great reasons that the climate justice movement needs so many different people from different backgrounds who have different skills, just because there's so many different types of work that need to be done.
Avery, you want to tackle that?
I actually completely agree with everything she just said, so I don't even want to finish after that, because I think that was great.
Fair enough. Well, Avery, let's get back to this. Well, I don't know. We only have about 15 minutes left. I'll just put out what you want to talk about. I've sort of been leading the discussion. Is there anything that is particularly on your minds that you want to go with before I lead you on to other issues I'm interested in, Avery?
I think the only thing that has been, like, I think is helpful to hear is that, like, with COVID right now, it is really hard to stay optimistic, and it's really hard to stay motivated in the climate world because there's so much other stuff going on that it's really hard to have a mindset of, like, focusing on this kind of far-off thing, except for it's not very far off, but, you know, farther off than COVID is. And I think that it's just really important to remember that, like, it's okay to give yourself a break from climate activism, even though it's super pressing and it's very, very important and we need to be working on it. It's also very important to prioritize mental health. And I think that, you know, climate change can really have large effects on mental health. And I think that we need to be both prioritizing our mental sanity and prioritizing the climate crisis, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, I just can't imagine what it's been like to be a school age person in this time, already facing something so vast and impending like the climate crisis, and then to be you know, blindsided by something like COVID. I don't know. You want to talk a little bit about that, Ada?
Yeah, it's definitely really difficult to be a student and be in school, and then also on the other side of that, be worrying that you're not doing enough to stop the climate crisis. It's like it's just so bizarre sometimes, where I'm like, I'll be in a Sunrise meeting talking about, like, what's the best strategy for convincing the legislators not to pass this bill, and then simultaneously, like, worrying that my math homework is overdue. And so it's just, but that's the reality for so many young people involved in climate justice, and it really starts to weigh on you that, like, this shouldn't be up to us. Like, we should be spending our free time, like, playing sports and doing extracurriculars and hanging out with friends. Like, we shouldn't have to be worrying that the government isn't doing enough for the climate crisis and that we might not have a future because the people who are in charge right now aren't taking action, and, you know, worrying that the government is going to expand a freeway into your school and wondering about whether or not the air that you're breathing at recess is going to cause asthma or lung cancer one day. Like, I feel a responsibility definitely to continue this work, not only for my generation but also for those who will come after us, and just, like, I really hope that future generations of kids don't have to worry about these things.
Speaking of dealing with pollution, there's a picture of you, Avery. You sent two pictures were sent of you. I, of course, picked the more dire of the two, being my inclination, but it's a picture of you with a mask on, and I guess it's actually a pre-COVID. It sort of foreshadows COVID. It's a mask against the wildfires. It's this totally smoky background. So, you know, talk about multiple intersecting crises. Obviously, it's fueled by climate change and many other factors, but do we still even remember the year of the wildfires that where the smoke inundated our metropolitan areas for really the kind of the to that degree the first time in my memory, and probably for the first time for you all. How was that summer with the wildfires, or whenever it was?
Yeah, so it was actually, I think that photo was taken last September, so it was the most recent wildfires we had. We had some wildfires up the McKinsey River near Eugene, and the fire smoke was awful. And so that was not fun. It hurt my lungs to breathe, and we couldn't go outside, and plus COVID, because there was COVID at that time. Yeah, it was definitely a lot. And, you know, we've had a trend of pretty bad wildfire seasons for the past few summers. So I don't know. I hope that that's not the new normal, because I'm not loving that.
Did you get rain this time around like we just did?
Yeah, a little bit.
We had some nice, yeah. Hate to make you jealous, but we had some nice soaking rains. It's just so amazing how a good strong rain can actually ease one's psyche. I mean, I don't remember experiencing that like I am now, the relief of getting a really good rain in the face of, you know, because everybody's saying, oh, this is going to be an even worse fire season. I guess they're saying that in California. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've been having a drought here. But, I mean, these are big things. I mean, in some ways, I'm kind of slightly inoculated just because, you know, I've gone through, I guess, a lot, and I've dealt with sort of doom and gloom scenarios for so long that in some ways, either my psyche has sort of insulated itself or just kind of gotten used to these things. But I don't know. I can only imagine it must be a little bit different. Of course, you all have both been involved for so many years. Maybe you're just old hands at it now. I don't know. Ada, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the wildfires especially, I feel like, should be a wake-up call that, you know, that the climate crisis is happening right now. And I think a lot of the time we think of it as it's something that will be in the future, or that's just affecting, like, plants and animals. But it's already happening, and we need to do something about it. I guess the wildfires is just something that's directly impacting our lives, and I hope people realize that.
Well, we'll talk, since you mentioned that forestry was an issue that Sunrise has taken up. Talk about what that means. You know, I did mention that there finally in the last few years has been more, you know, because of the hard work of some different groups, there's been more attention being paid to the actual role that forests play in ameliorating, mitigating climate change by, you know, absorbing carbon, and, you know, the fact that big old growth trees actually absorb more carbon against the, you know, decades old propaganda from the forest industry when they first started trying to combat, you know, among the many fronts that they're putting out propaganda on, that's one of them. They vigorous young trees, you know, absorb more CO2, which is not true. But let's talk about how Sunrise is addressing forest issues.
Yeah, I'm not super involved in the forestry campaign, but I do know that they were doing a lot of work with the Board of Forestry and giving testimony, things like that, writing letters to legislators. And then one of the big things that's happening right now, actually, can, guess what, be tied back to ODOT. They have this thing called the Hazardous Tree Removal Project, which is essentially they are cutting down a whole bunch of trees unnecessarily with basically the excuse that this tree could hit this tree, could hit this tree, could hit this tree, which could fall into the highway, which is completely ridiculous, and they're saying it's a safety thing, but really it's just another excuse to further destroy forests and cut down more trees and destroy nature, which we've talked about, like, incorporating that even potentially as part of our strike demands, because
that's a great idea. Yeah, I've just recently become aware of that. Yeah, it's a, you know, the once upon a time, when the whole forest issue started to become a big deal back in the late 70s, 80s, the Forest Service would actually leave a sort of a, what was it called? There was a, called it a view, I don't know who called it a view shed. I don't know if they did it cynically or we did, but basically would leave a row of trees on either side of the highway so you actually couldn't see the massive, massive clear cuts that were going on all over the place in the national forests. And so, but now it's, now they're, it's kind of a whole different thing. They're, now they're just knocking them all down with the excuse that they're possibly, anyway, they'll use any excuse, I guess. Avery, is there anything you want to add to the forestry issue, being down there in Eugene, so close to kind of the historical heart of the forest protection movement in the Northwest?
Yeah, I actually don't know a lot about the forest fire stuff at the moment, but I'm eager to learn more about what's going on near Eugene.
Fair enough, fair enough. There's so much to know, so much to learn. We only have a few minutes left, actually just about 4 minutes left, so I don't know if anybody wants to... Oh, it looks like somebody did write in just now as I was going to ask people to write in if they want to. Of course, my computer is so slow, it's not coming up on my Facebook page, so let's forget about that for a second. So yeah, the Avery, this lawsuit is, I guess, coming up on June 25th will be the next hearing. There's the settlement conference with Magistrate Judge Thomas Coffin. Oh, they'll schedule a settlement conference with Magistrate Judge Thomas Coffin before June 25th, when I guess will be the next hearing with Judge Aiken. And so what are your how do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, I try really hard to just be super optimistic, because partly I am super optimistic. You know, these are great judges, and I'm super hopeful that being back in the district court will help us. And I'm also just optimistic hearing all that Biden has said. You know, he says he's very climate friendly, and he really wants to make changes. And so I'm hoping that he's going to stick to his word and actually, you know, work with us and do good things in court. So.
Right on. And so June 25th, that's going to be in Eugene again, I take it?
I believe that's an over-the-phone call. I think because of COVID, they're doing everything over the phone.
Yeah, of course. How could I forget? I keep thinking, oh, things are starting to get over. But no, I just remember when there are huge rallies outside the courtroom and in the past when, again, this is such a long case. People can go to Our Children's Trust to educate yourselves if you don't already know about the history of this landmark Juliana v. United States, which I guess there's been a lot of ups and downs over the years, and we'll see how that ends up going. So back to you, Ada. Any final thoughts as you prepare for doing battle once again with the Oregon Department of Transportation?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I know that's always kind of a difficult thing to throw at guests. Any final thoughts, last words, big summations? So, I wish you both the very best of luck in your continued endeavors on all our behalves. I don't know. I sometimes despair, so it gives me a lot of a boost of energy to see young folks. And I think it's I don't know, seeing young people get activated at such a young age. It took me until, gosh, I was in my mid to late 20s before I really became an activist. So I can only think how much more I could have done. So I don't know if you have any words of encouragement. I don't know. I guess there's probably some young folks listening as the as we go into our youth programming for the day. I guess you're Ada, probably looking for more people to get involved in Sunset PDX. Or how many people are involved in it?
That is a good question. We have probably about 40 people who are like active members, but there's like a couple hundred people technically in our Slack workspace, but definitely not all that are active. One of the great things about Sunrise is that people kind of, like, there's a lot of transition and leadership, and like people come to Sunrise and sort of learn a bunch of organizing skills from that and then can take those skills and move on and do other things, especially because it's a youth organization and people are constantly, like, you know, moving to different places and like going off to college or going in doing various things.
Becoming no longer youth, as it inevitably happens to all of us. Well, listen, we're out of time now, so I want to thank both of you so much. This has been a really great conversation. Avery lives in Eugene and is involved in the landmark Juliana versus United States lawsuit, and Ada is a ninth grader at Grant High School involved with Sunrise PDX. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're quite welcome. Stay tuned for more of KBOO's Youth Day special programming. Celebrate with us as KBOO's Youth Collective and other youth-driven shows take over the airwaves with interviews, music, and in-depth discussions starting in a minute. And you can go to kbo.fm/youth to donate directly to the Youth Collective and such great programming. Thank you, Sonia, operating the board. Thanks, everybody, for listening. It's Paul Rowland signing off. Bye.
My mommy loves you.
Hi, I'm Chance, and I'm a member of KBOO's Youth Collective. I think my life's changed in the most important way from going to KBOO's because I finally actually found my passion for public policy and learning about these complex issues, and that's why I'm going to be studying